Okay, I've got a syllabus that we're not going to have. I've discovered a prayer can. Prayer does almost everything, but it won't get you through one of these syllabi in 30-something minutes. But I discovered this the hard way at time before this church this morning. So you don't have to be the guinea pig. Somebody else had to put those little suits on, the guinea pig hair suits, and do this. And I've got more material than we're going to cover. We're not going to try to read all this material or anything of this type, but I'm going to try to hit the highlights of it. And we have a related topic at tonight. So our topic this morning is God the Rest Giver, and our topic tonight is God the Peacemaker. And those are two distinctly different notions in the Bible, and they're both critically important. The first one is the Rest Giver. And the introduction here, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my load is light. Now, the first time you read that, if you grew up like I did, it wove into that verse. I've listed five or six of them there, of where God had promised rest in the Old Testament. They came to fruition in that person of the Son. And so here are the verses that are feeders. We're actually going to work backwards from the New Testament into the Old today, and then come back up to the New Testament to close. But here are the verses, Exodus 33:14. And he said, Lord's talking to Moses there, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. It's a promise of God for rest. Jeremiah 6:16, thus saith the Lord, stand by the ways and see, and ask for the ancient path, where the good way is, and walk in it, and you shall find rest for your souls. You can see that echo in the passage by Jesus. Ezekiel 34:15, I will feed my flock, and I will lead them to rest, declares the Lord God. 2 Samuel 7:11, this is to David, the Davidic king, I will give you rest from all your enemies. Deuteronomy 5:33, according to all the way which the Lord your God commanded thee to walk in it, that he may give you rest. And then Jeremiah 31:25, for I satisfy the weary ones and refresh everyone who languishes. And so this is the context of going forth, that God held out to Moses, to David, to his people, the promise of some kind of rest, a rest that's likened to pasture for sheep. That's likened, the word is used of birds finding a nest and coming back from gathering worms and all the things we birds do, coming back to the nest and then nesting, staying there, and resting. That's the word this is our word rest that's used for those kinds of images. And so what we want to do today, this morning, is go over the nature of rest. We're going to talk about just the basics of it, core concept, and we're going to talk about a little bit extra around it, and then we'll talk about some themes that intersect it with the Messiah and things of that type, and then we're going to come back and try to recap what that means today. We've got a little bit of application. Most of the application is in the night session where we cover the second half of the topic. So what I've got here, like I say, is all the material that I'm not going to cover. But I'm going to cover one or two bullets under each one of the points so that we get the flow of how it goes. Rest is there for you to further study if you want to. But we are going to read the highlighted points in the basic idea. That first one under on page one, the nature of rest in the Bible, the basic idea. The frequent occurrences of God's promises to give his people rest include all of the preceding ideas. A place to stand on, a place to land in, so like the nest thing, that of course was what? That was the land of Israel, Palestine. A place of serenity, so it had an internal component, the way you felt. Cessation from effort, you stopped doing something. Some kind of effort you stopped. You kept breathing, you kept eating, you kept cooking sometimes. But you stopped some kind of effort. But they also include a fourth idea, and that is safety and security. So rest has to do with the notion also of feeling secure. You have a place, and you're there. You're not worried about being attacked under the cover of darkness. It's a place of safety and security. This sense is to get or provide relief from a threat or attack. We're constantly under attack, constantly threats, Some are inside, we'll see. Some are outside, we'll see. So God not only promises to give his people a place to settle, but he also promises to give them a place of security. So if you look at the point two down there, Genesis 8:4, the ark rested on Mount Ararat. That's our word, rested. It came after all the turbulence of the storm and the flood. It landed and rested. It found a resting place. It sat there. It was calm for once. You could stop taking Dramamine. Everything was still. Everything was okay at that particular point. That's our word, rested. And I made the point of three, that it's often used of birds landing in their nest or sheep reaching their pasture. One derivative from this word, by the way, is that the word that's alluded to is pasture in Psalm 23. So when the shepherd leads you by, remember when it's by still waters, remember sheep are terrified of turbulent waters. The agitation of waves scares sheep. And so that's one of the sweetness I've always liked, is God leads me sometimes through turbulent waters, but a lot of times through still water, so I'm not worried about the water, I'm just worried about the land that I'm walking on. But the pasture, the cool pasture to sleep at night, because I ain't got to worry about the wolves coming, because the shepherd's there with his staff. And I remember one of the most touching pictures I have ever seen was a drawing some artist had done where it had this shepherd, an Israelite shepherd, Jesus, the cloak and everything. He had the staff held up, and a lamb is sleeping there, but the shepherd's not looking at the lamb. The shepherd is looking at a ridge about maybe 30 yards away where the wolves are looking at the sheep. But the shepherd's got the staff looking at the wolves. But the lamb doesn't have a clue, about the wolves. Not worried, because he's sitting right where he needs to be, in the shade of the shepherd. And that's why the rod and staff, they comfort me. Not that he's going to do anything to me with them, although there are occasions where we have to take that trip to the woodshed. But apart from those, the rod is for the wood to keep us at bay. And that's the notion of peace, safety, and rest that we're talking about here. So if you turn to page 2, in B, that's the thumbnail. And now we're going to look at the various components of that. So the point B there is rest from enemies, from threats, and from every side. So the kind of rest we're talking about here, biblical rest, is constantly stated like that first point from Deuteronomy 12. When you cross the Jordan and live in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to inherit, that's that place to stay, and he gives you rest, one, from all your enemies around you, and two, that you live in security. That's that notion. They're enemies. These are external threats. If you look at number 2, and the Lord gave them rest on every side. If you do a concordant search on every side, it shows up about 10 times, describing rest. That it's not, it doesn't do me any good just to save me on one side if I got enemies on the other three things. Because that just, all that does is put out one set of fires, and I got to turn around, and then I got to deal with it. I'm gonna get burned one way or the other. But this puts out rest on all the different sides. This is where you. The notion of enemies, threats, and from every side. C, point C, and I put the Hebrew in there because Knapp said that y'all were all new Hebrew and could sight read this so that I wouldn't have to explain it. I could just actually put this in there. And so he said, especially if you use words like hallelujah and shalom, that y'all would get those. And so that's what most of these words are. Yeah, right. This also includes rest from agitators. And I'm going to talk about why I use the word smile there in the second bullet. So the first bullet is Exodus 22:11. But on the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. This is the land, okay, Sabbath year, so that the needy of your people may eat, and whatever they leave the beast of the field may eat. All right, so this is the Sabbath rest, for the land, right? Now, it's still going to grow, but what's not going to happen to it? We're not going to go prodding and poking and plowing and messing with it, right? We're going to leave it alone to do what it naturally does. We are not going to be the irritant that we normally are to the soil when we do cultivation and things of this type. That's what the rest is. Leave it alone and let it fill its purpose by itself. Let it just grow what comes naturally out of it. And then a different kind of irritant that we're supposed to be is this next verse, Isaiah 62:6. On your walls, O Jerusalem, I have appointed watchmen. God is speaking, Yahweh. All day and all night, they will never keep silent. The watchmen will be watching. You who remind the Lord, okay, now reminding the Lord in the Old Testament is reminding the Lord of His covenant commitment. Alright? So like every morning when I'm praying for my kids, I go, when I get to the kid part of the prayers, I say, Lord, I remind you of your commitment that you made to me about my kids. Okay? The deal that we cut before they were born, etc. I remind you, and I hold you to that covenant. I grab your skirt like the widow did Elijah, and I'm not going to let go till they grow up to be carriers of peace and warriors of beauty. Right? That's the promise. Okay? And so these are the reminders of the promises to protect Israel. The reminder to God. Keep in His faith His covenant, His promises. Nothing He likes more than you reminding Him of what His heart has already committed to. Okay? So, take no rest for yourselves, but here's a big one. And give Him no rest. That's our word. Don't give God any rest until He establishes and makes Jerusalem praise and earth. So this is that irritant thing. We're supposed to be an irritant to God. This is like that widow that won't let the judge sleep until she gets, you know, justice in the New Testament. Just stays after Him. We're supposed to not give. This is God telling us, I want you to give me a moment's peace about this promise. Stay after me. Pray without ceasing. Stay after me. But it illustrates our notion of what rest is. That's why I use the verse, is that it shows us that rest is an absence of constant barrage of external demands upon our time, demands upon our attention, demands upon our heart. And then three, the Hebrew one you can read on your own. We won't do that. Next page. It's also a freedom from a particular type of enemy, pain, sorrow, harsh toil and work, and includes this. That first one, Exodus 23:12. 6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh you shall cease. Remember, on the seventh day they were supposed to have Shabbat, which was Shabbat is one of our words for rest. And it's a they're still going to have to work. They're still going to cook. They're still going to do barbecues. They're still going to have family and friends over. You know, they're still going to clean up spills, some of them. Okay, they're just not going to go plow. They're not going to go sow. They're not going to sell things and things of this type. Right? They're still going to be active, but they're not going to do the kind of work that demands them, their attention and reflection. In other words, the whole point of the Sabbath was to free me up, give me discretionary time for my thought life. The whole point was to sit there and allow me to sit down, collect my thoughts once in the week, and reflect upon the big picture. What did God do in my life this week? What was this? What was that all about on Tuesday? Good grief, I'm still picking shrapnel out of my legs on that. What was that all about? You know? And then why did this blessing pop in on Thursday? What was this? What's the point? And it's to back up, I call it reboot, control, alt, delete. We come back up and say, okay, where am I? What was that? And where is the big picture here? And that's what it's supposed to be. Freedom from the harsh work. And includes freedom, of course, in some cases, pain and sorrow. Freedom from fear. It leads to security and safety. We've already looked at that first point, Deuteronomy, but I've got highlighted that the point of security. It doesn't do me any good to know that I'm protected for... It says in the book of Proverbs that the righteous man does not fear bad news. That weird verse that says he does not fear bad news because he's going to take it all in stride. Either it's going to be minimal or it's going to be something he can deal with. Right? And so there's not an anxiety. I always think, you know, I have this illustration of my life because it's always just so chaotic. It bounces around and all this kind of stuff that I'm this little pinball in a pinball. And just bouncing around between all the bumpers of light. Just this frenzied activity. And just as I get down to the end, I think, almost out of all this thing, God hits the flippers. Boom! It just slows down. I get what we call consolidation. I get to consolidate the gains and get Shabbat. And say, wow, thanks for that. I really did not enjoy that necessarily. Thanks that it's over. Flippers. Here I go with something different. Something different this time. And so there's that element that you get to where over the time you get. Okay, so what's today? What's the crisis du jour? But it's with the calmness. You know it's going to be there. But every single day there's been one there, and every single day you've gotten through it, and you've gotten stronger, and you've gotten more grace-filled, and God made you prettier in your heart and your soul and the way you relate. And so you sit there and say, okay, that's an acceptable trade-off. I'll take that because I'm going to get closer to you, and I'm going to be able to share that with other people that are needy and have been through and are going through that and things of this type. So, hey, I got no complaints, Lord. You're in charge here, and you know what's best a whole lot better than I do. And so there's that element that I don't have to have a fear of it. It may still hit me. You know, there's always that thing I call the gap. There's a gap always between the time that the problem arises and the time that I get the answer. Okay? God doesn't prevent a lot of problems in my life, even the ones that I cause. That's a separate problem, but that's 4 hours. We won't go there, okay? But He'll let them pop in, and He'll let them cook. There's a gap there before you reach the edge of 1 Corinthians 10:13, before it gets to where I can't stand it. You know, it's how many reps can I do before I'm going to actually hurt myself? You know, if I do too little, I ain't going to get anything out of it except pride about how much I did, and then feeling bad that I didn't do enough, right? And so there's this dynamic that's called the gap. And the psalmist is always sitting there saying, thank you, Lord, for your deliverance. By the way, that we're not delivered yet, Lord. But thank you in advance for this. I know you're going to do this. Get me through this kind of thing. So there's a freedom from that. Now, that's our basic notion. And now we move some extra things that are floating around that basic notion of rest from external threats, from enemies, and outside distraction. And the first one there is the bottom of page 3, is that this state of rest also has psychological aspects to it. In other words, I'm supposed to enjoy that rest. So if you look at the verse there, which is an opposite verse, and among those nations you shall find no rest, and there will be no resting place for the sole of your foot. But there the Lord will give you a trembling heart, failing of eyes, and despair of soul. Now that comes from the blessings and cursings section of Deuteronomy, where God is saying, okay, let's get 2 big rocks, and we're going to write down, make this really simple for you, and you pick which way you want to go. Here's the rocks of blessing, and let's write down, if you walk with me and your heart is always sensitive, and every time you fail in your relationship with me or with others, you come with a contrite heart, and you try to make up with somebody, and you pay them back if you took something wrong. Just try to clean it up, but you keep your heart honest before me. You sit there, and you come in and you say, Father, okay, you were right. I was wrong. That was more destructive than I figured it would be. Okay? And when you go through this, then here are the blessings that occur. And it's a spiral. The more you walk with the Lord all openly and honestly, the greater the blessing stream occurs. You still have challenges. You still have issues and things of this type. But that's a spiral. That's the blessing that leads to rest. Okay? Then there's another big rock where most of us apparently camp out on. And I'm not sure why we like it. It must be closer to where we live. This is the rock of discipline. This is where, okay, if you don't get it, I'll gently try to correct you. If you don't pay attention that time, I'm going to talk a little louder and use different object lessons. This will be a spiral too, but eventually it gets down to this unrest where it eats at your heart. I'm going to try to at least get your attention where we can get you back over here. Okay? And this was down toward the bottom, where the opposite of rest was just this anxiety. Now, I don't know about you, but I can get in situations where I'm perfectly, where there are no demands upon me that are unmet, no outstanding issues, and I can still be worried sick. Right? I can still be worried sick about the next one that's coming that I don't know yet. That makes it even worse. Right? I'll just... And I'm the one that I like to, when a challenge comes, I skip the worrying part and go straight to despair. That's one of the things I like to do. It just shortcuts the whole system. I just skip right over to what I call Ziggy mode, you know, and I'm just, you know, I sort of expect this, and that's what I get anyway, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't even worry about how it's going to resolve. I just go straight to despair, cut the middleman out, right? But this element has a notion of not resignation, but a peace associated with it. With a definite a calm part. If you look over at the next page, point B, for example, the soothing aroma is from our word. Now, if you remember that some of the sacrifices in the Old Testament are called with a soothing aroma, some of the incense, that when you burn them in the sacrifice, they were called a soothing. That's our word rest. It's a restful aroma to God. It's that notion of where God has been vexed, to use the King James word, by the Israelites in the wilderness. He vexed them. He frustrated the Spirit. There's an Old Testament passage of we grieve the Spirit in the New Testament. You know, we no doubt, as a loving parent, we no doubt put the Father in numerous situations of not worry, but just that, why did he do that again? Why did he not do that again? You know, whatever. There's that element. And when I wake up from that and decide, well, you know, okay, good point, and I go do this in the Old Testament, I would have done a soothing aroma thing, then it's not the smell, really, you know, that soothes God. It's the heart. Because he sees that we're, you know, I'm back in the game here. I'm back playing, and he can now teach me again. I'm now teachable again. Now he can bless me again. He can change me. He can transform me in the image of his Son. So that, again, that's that notion. It's the soothing thing about this rest that's supposed to be upon our soul. C, point C, social and community elements, removal of the treacherous and help for others with even a universal dimension. Now the point here I want to make is that when he gives me as an individual rest, he'll do that by dealing with my enemies. But when he gives a community, a group rest, he may have to do that by getting rid of enemies from within the community. In other words, if there are saboteurs in our community that are going to destroy and put treachery in place and make it to where I have to lock my doors with 5 locks instead of just 3, you know, those kind of elements, eventually, when we get to the new future out there, those elements can't be there. So he's got to exile them one way or another, remove the wicked, and that's what the final judgment is about. So when I get to the final judgment, it's so that when we go into the new future, the new community, the new heavens and the new earth, I don't have to even suspect malice or treachery on anybody's part. I don't even have to, nothing like that. Where that is a constant element in this life, where you always are having to ask, how far can I trust? Even the people you love most, there's still a spectrum. Until we get brand new hearts and when the spirits that we got at salvation, when we trust in the Lord, when that gets completely, when that incandescences, invent a word, and burns through all this other junk, and then all we are is this blinding thing of incandescent beauty, joy, celebration, freedom, and love, and righteousness, and warmth, and care. Once you get there, then I don't have to worry about locking my door. I don't have to worry about, should I actually say this? Is this being indiscreet? Is this going to come back around to haunt me? You know, those kinds of things. That element disappears in a rest model. I will make there a point two under C, a verse that's important to remember here. Indeed, he will speak to this people through stammering lips and foreign tongue. He who said to them, here is rest, give rest to the weary. And here is repose, but they would not listen. Now notice the connection there. He says, he offers to Israel, he says, here's rest. And immediately he says, now why don't you share it with the weary? In other words, rest doesn't stop with me. When I'm fat, dumb, and happy, and I'm sitting at home, and I'm just out of my middle-aged, mid-afternoon nap, right? And when I'm just right there, that's supposed to spill over to the life of somebody else in this kind of model. It's not just supposed to be, I'm just not supposed to be, you know, personal peace and affluence model of comfort. There's an element of actually sharing. It's not as strong and imperative as we will see tonight on Shalom. But in rest, it's still supposed to spill over. I'm supposed to help be sanctuary to other people as well. Okay? All right, let's go over to page 5. The positive notion of refreshment is present too. Now, so far, we've only talked about what would be an English word, peace, or a Greek word, eirene, where it's absence of war, absence of conflict, and I'm at least that kind of peace. Okay? So I'm not worried. I'm not. I'm secure. I'm comfortable. Okay, but it actually goes a step further to actual positive refreshment. This rest actually is supposed to give me new energy level, new spring in myself, and it's based upon what God did at creation. So look at the first bullet. In a pausin, which is the Greek word, to become physically refreshed after ceasing activity or work, rest. Okay. And then down the other bowl, the restorative character of rest rather than mere cessation of activity. In other words, it's just not stopping. but it's actually a refreshment that deals with it. And the next quote, point two, is the one I want to actually read halfway. Rest was built into the natural rhythms of life by the Creator, who rested on the seventh day of creation. An important part of the meaning of rest is suggested by the mystery of divine rest. It draws a boundary around work and exertion and takes a legitimate delight in celebrating what has been accomplished so far without the urge to keep on working. Okay? And the way this works is like this. So God does the creation, works for 6 days, does all the creation thing, and he rests and then enjoys it and says it's good. Right? It says it's great work, why don't we do some more? No, he takes a break. He sits there and takes a day just to relax and celebrate and enjoy what has gone before. In other words, something happened that week. And so the Shabbat rest, that's a Shabbat rest. When I see Israel, okay, in the Old Testament, when I got to that rest, I was supposed to reflect on what I did those previous 6 days, what God gave me in terms of crops, or in the craft that I did, or the people I got to help, or to celebrate, or whatever. I was supposed to stop and celebrate that without having that temptation that, boy, that was so successful, I'm going to skip resting today and go back to work. In other words, you don't become an OC, you know, a 4+ obsessive compulsive on this model. You have to stop and celebrate it, giving thanks and reflect upon where it fits. Okay? And that's modeled after what God did in Genesis, where he did it all. There's no exertion. You know, that means he's tired, so he had to take a break. If he took a nap. You know, if he took a nap, it was between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, I've discovered. That's probably the best model for that. But it was that period where he just looked and said, this is good. This is good. And so it draws a circle, a boundary around work without the impulse to keep going until the next day that you're supposed to get after that. Okay? Specific themes, I just got to mention these. I can't cover them much because I want to get to the recap. Rest is something that's very promised by God. And I got the two verses there where I just quoted. There's many of them in there where it says, according to all he has sworn to their fathers, so Israel's rest were all promised by God. These are promises. It's accomplished by the presence of God, mostly in the tabernacle or temple. So that first thing from Exodus 33:14, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. So rest is related to the presence of God. If you, one of the secrets is, you know, if you want to be more restful, guess who you get closer to? God. The further you get away, the more you get in that fear and trembling and not so sure, and things get more confusing. There's plenty of confusion. There's enough confusion over here close to God. Because I'm going to fight him every step of the way about what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, I mean, there's a separate kind of confusion there, but it's a clearer confusion. I know where the lines are when I'm arguing there. Over here, it's a lot more morally ambiguous, to use the phrase, okay? So it's accomplished by the presence of God, and I'm going to come back to this, because in Israel, if I got in trouble, guess where I ran? When it happened to King David, where did he go when he was, you know, really in trouble? He ran into the temple, and he wrote us another song, right? He went like this. He ran into the temple and said, God, if you get me out of this one, I vow to write another song. Right. So he said that we know he was in trouble at least 150 times. And if he goes on the basis of verse count, Psalm 119, whoa, that's a separate problem. Okay? So if you were in trouble and enemies, one of the places you were supposed to go was to the temple. Point C was this present motif. Also harkens back to the garden rest. Hebrews passage about rest, that God finished from his works from the foundation of the world, that's an allusion over to the garden rest of God. Now, there's an interesting thing that you have to remember in Hebrews is that the rest that Hebrews is talking about is that new future rest, part of which I get now, right, because all those enemies were already fought off by somebody else at the cross. See, you know, it's all the enemies that stopped me from enjoying rest today, with the exception of one, okay, was defeated at the cross. And even part of the ones, we'll have to talk about that tonight. But all the ones, the devil, punishment for sin, the mess I got myself into in terms of circumstances, and legal commitments outside of even justification, all of those were dealt with at the cross. And so all the enemies that stopped me from getting rest, okay, were dealt with there at the cross, totally. The one that stops me from getting to peace, which is shalom, which I'll go ahead and tell you, it's the pogo. We have met the enemy, and he is us. There we have to have the Holy Spirit to work sanctification to deal with what I'm going to do with this rest. Okay? And that's tonight we'll talk when we get into shalom. But getting the garden rest is about recognizing that somebody else finished the work. That's the finished work of Christ on the cross. E is the big Sabbath rest ahead. That's that new future I talk about. I quoted a Jewish rabbi there from the Mishnah where they're talking about which psalms have to be sung on which days. And the last line there says Psalm 92, for the time to come, for that day shall be all Sabbath and rest in the life everlasting. They visualize the new future as an all Sabbath. So all you did was eat, party, and rejoice with your family and community, and you didn't have to go out and plow. You didn't have to go out and make tables and this kind of stuff, and all that was sort of covered. And then the next page, point four, the Davidic deliverer. This comes back to our Matthew passage, okay? And I'm going to read this and unpack this phrase by phrase. As the ultimate son of David, Jesus announces the awaited rest. Remember, come unto me, all you that are heavy laden, I will give you rest. He announces the awaited rest, thereby claiming to bring fulfillment, to fulfillment, Yahweh's Old Testament promise. Soteriologically, dealing with salvation, this amounts to a claim that the total salvation God promised His people is being realized through Jesus as the Messiah. In other words, there's no question anymore about how God was going to provide the rest. It was coming through the Messiah, through Jesus. No more question. Christologically, in promising rest, Jesus stands in the place reserved for Yahweh in the Old Testament. In other words, all the places where God in the first person said, I, God, will do this, and Jesus steps in and says, yep, I will, then what does that tell you about Jesus? That He's God, Christologically. Okay? When Jesus gets up there, Jesus has this really strange phrase for the last, he's trying to get the last few words in before he dies to His disciples. And he's really deeply in anguish and very depth of, this is the night before the crucifixion, and he's really opening more and more of his heart open and more trying to get more teaching into his disciples. And he makes some comment about the Father, and Philip says to him, says, well, show us the Father, and that'll be enough for us. That's all we want to do. Just show us the Father. And then Jesus says, have I been with you so long, Philip, and you have not known me? Not. Has He not been with you so long and you not known Him, Father? He says, have I not known, been with you so long and you have not known me? He who has seen me has seen the Father. It's just there. I mean, these are audacious claims. If you are not God, you're C.S. Lewis, you're on the level of having the brain of a poached egg. If you make that claim and you're not God. So, Christologically, He stands in the place. Oppressive forces, once again, threaten to overcome the powerless among God's people. Jesus, in response, uses an Old Testament expression for Yahweh's salvation, but makes the promise in His own name. Okay, quick recap. Rest means being in your God-designed place. Okay, God's will. Rest means being through with any struggles needed to get there, any of the combat that they used to get into the promised land. Rest means not worrying about outside attacks or threats. It involves security and safety. Rest is not only an external state, but it's also an internal experience. Close in nuance, the English rest or soothe. Rest is freedom from distraction and agitation to be able to focus on creation and enjoyment of new delight, new beauty, and new warmth. Rest is designed to lead to refreshment of life, new energy, new joy, new eagerness to see what God has for us today. Community rest is designed to be for all people, not just biblical Israel. Community rest will involve removal of the treacherous and destructive, so we really can be safe as a community. Rest is designed to reset our values. When we are not fighting fires, we can see the big picture a little better. Rest was initially in Genesis, was in the Old Testament throughout, and now with us spiritually, and will be in the new future, based upon the presence of a rest-making and rest-giving God. The Shabbat rest is our response to His Nuach rest, making efforts against our enemies. Let me stop. There are two words for rest. that we didn't talk about, Shabbat rest that we did talk about, where I sit there and stop from working and reflect. The Nuach rest is rest from the enemy. Those are two different words. This is where God's given me this war hostility rest, and this is the Sabbath rest. It's the commanded, the covenant rest. It's ordered upon me as part of the covenant. But those are used of both types of God's rest. So he actually went after the enemies. And the enemies I mentioned there just quickly that he dealt with, especially at the cross, was an enemy of our legal guilt. And we have the doctrine of justification. Our condemnation under the spiritual powers, where we are under their power. He dethroned them with Christ the victor. An enemy of the degenerative situation caused by our sinful behavior. The mess we got in. Redemption is that. And then our deception about God's heart, our sin and our helplessness. If we were ever confused about whether we could work our way to heaven, whether our sin wasn't that serious, or God was really distant, all you have to do is look at His Son on the cross and know what's going on inside that family in terms of pain and anguish. For those of you who saw the Passion of the Christ, when that teardrop fell, started the earthquake, and you know that kind of pain. 12, this Nuach rest fight was won by the one meek and lowly of heart. This wasn't your standard kind of battle. It was a brute force. He won this one through love, mercy, gentleness, and dethroning. Rest is something we're supposed to share with others because our good-hearted God shared it with us. Okay? Six is our transitional. But rest is not enough. We need shalom. And here's why. Look at the verse. Therefore, you did deliver them into the hands of their oppressors who oppressed them. But when they cried to thee in the time of their distress, you did hear from heaven, and according to your great compassion, you did give them deliverers who delivered them from the hand of their oppressors. All right? So they're in trouble. Guess what you do? They cried to God. God delivered them. And now they're back at rest. 28. But as soon as they had rest, they did evil again before thee. Now, I seem to live this a lot. Every time I get out of trouble and get into a safe place and I start feeling what the English would call expansive, right? I am tempted to get self-centered. I start organizing other things around me that give me the same level of pleasure and soothing, etc., like this, without even sometimes even thinking about what am I actually supposed to do. You know, granted I'm in this nice little space. I've got my office perfectly arranged. Everything's at right angles. I'm going to go back through my filing and recap all these little things, right, that are fall in the category of rest and things of this type, okay? But there's still that thing that maybe just, I may have just spun out on a self-centered axis because of this. Because the problem is the heart. See? I mean, you still got to do this. You can deliver me every day, and you'll have to do it every day. Let you do something inside. And that's where we'll go to. And the application I got down there is pretty simple. If rest flowed from the temple in the Old Testament to others, and we are the New Testament temples, people should be coming to us for rest. And when people walk in our orbit, come with a problem, do we instantly try to solve it? Or do we bring them rest? Do we sit quietly on the mourner's bench with them? Or do we lecture them on how to work through it that God will get them through it? When they come and they share a deep problem with us where they want you to listen just first before you get into fix-it mode, are we there? Do we bring rest first before we bring healing, which is shalom, later? Okay, that's our application from this. We'll do more applications.